Well, I'm sure that somewhere I must really look at ability. But the thing that really turns me on, I think, is his heart. His response is very important to me. If I share something with him and he runs with that, or he tries to do something with that, that's very important to me. I mean, the guy could be Joe Campus. I mean, Mr. Everything. And I go by and share something with the guy and try to help him, and he doesn't respond. Then it doesn't take too many sessions like that before Joe's on his own, as far as I'm concerned. And I see Joe in terms of his potential, but I just can't get any response out of him. But you take some guy down here that doesn't look that sharp, but he's teachable, and you can really bring this guy into, I mean, you can really help the guy. Now, see, my objective is not to produce navigator staff. And so when I look at a guy in terms of his potential, I'm not looking at it in terms of a job slot. I'm looking at a guy as far as his ability to make an impact in the kingdom of God on earth. And see, he doesn't have to be Joe Cool to do that. He can be just Joe, simple plotter. Who was it? Was it Ednar Judson or somebody? Who was it that says, when I die, make sure there's printed on my tombstone, I was a plotter? Who said that? Who was that?
William Carey.
William Carey, is that it? He said, you know, if anything is said about me, make sure it was said I was a plotter. Well, those are good people. I was a plotter. Those are good people. And so you don't look at the guy in terms of a job slot with the navigators or with the BSU or with anything else. You look at him as a plus factor in the kingdom of God. Does that help? Yeah. Okay, the next one is by mastering the art of developing men, not manipulating them. This term, developing men, gang, I know that probably your own personal experience has been that if you can see yourself growing and maturing, you're tremendously motivated. Have you ever looked back over a year and say, well, man, I made some mistakes, but you know, I'm a different guy than I was when I started this year. I'm a little bit better. I'm a little bit different. I can see it. God has done a work in my life. And you know, that's tremendously motivational. For you, I mean, personally, that motivates yourself. And see, when a guy sees himself developing, boy, he's motivated. Oh, he's motivated. He's really hungry when he sees him. When he sees you, you're really helping him. And by the way, gang, this is why you want to be very careful about trying to get a guy to conform to your program. You don't want to put a guy at the academy one year, tremendous fella, lived down in Alabama. He went home over Christmas. He had a good buddy, and he began to work with this guy a little bit. One day the guy told him, he said, listen, you know, I really would just appreciate it if you would look upon me as your friend and not your project. Well, that was hard, but it was true, and he learned a great lesson out of that. Well, gang, are people your project? Or are they someone that you care for and you're seeking to help him anyway? Or are they some project that you're plugging them through a program? Our job is not to use men, but to minister to them. I think this is probably one of the greatest temptations among Christian leaders is to use men and not develop them. By the way, you might throw in here also the little thought that a leader is a servant. He is a giant servant. You know, it is a staggering thought to me to realize that God is a servant God. Do you realize how much He serves you? Do you realize how much God serves you? He serves you. And the thought that our God is a servant God is staggering to me. The omniscient, all powerful, all knowledgeable, all present, everything God serves mortal man, serves them. And gang, if you're going to be a leader in His ball game, you're going to have to do the same thing. You really serve people. And as long as you're developing people, let me also kind of cover this thought about developing them to their maximum. Boy, gang, don't be afraid to stretch a guy. Don't be afraid to ask a lot of a person. And never, ever let a guy give you 90%. Never let that happen. Because so what you'll be doing is you'll be building into this guy's life that as long as he does that, that's good enough. And in reality, you're developing the same syndromes of just kind of a half-hearted guy. And he may be giving you 90%, but he's half-hearted. And you're developing that, if you allow that to be, okay. But develop men to their maximum. To their maximum. You know, gang, guys, I really feel that out at our campus in San Luis, that we have a really highly motivated gang. Boy, they're a turned on bunch. And highly motivated. Gunners, man, they just eat nails, you know. And they, at the same time, you know, they're human. They love fun. They love a good night's sleep when they occasionally get one. No, I'll throw that in. But they're human people. But they're highly motivated. Oh, they're highly motivated. You know why they're highly motivated? It's because they have seen themselves developed and become better people. And they can see it in their own life. And some of the, I think of this one guy named Dave. I don't think that Dave ever believed that he could be the man that he is today. And boy, he is really motivated. Because someone is developing him and helping him and serving him and meeting his needs. Okay, the next one is by ministering to the whole man. Let me just read to you briefly here, lessons learned number one. And I learned this down at the University of California at Irvine when I was ministering there. And that was this, that the primary purpose of our spending time with men is to aid them in realizing a better life, to develop the whole man. And I define better life socially, emotionally, physically, mentally, spiritually. And let me read you a little thing that caused me to learn this lesson. But often we emphasize the spiritual so much they feel guilty for sitting down and reading Newsweek for an hour. Thus, when they leave the ministry, you know, graduate and go someplace, they leave the ministry, they don't want to tie in anymore, they just want to live. And when they do set up a home or an apartment after graduation and begin to act normal, they are defeated with guilt for doing what they enjoy versus what they did on campus. The guy goes out and lays in the sun for a couple hours on Saturday and he's just racked with guilt. Because I hadn't even reviewed my verses today yet. Or you think, well, I'll go out and land something, but I better take my verses with me or a tape or, you know. And he's under this stress and he doesn't really enjoy life. And I think the thing that's caused it is because that's all you ever talked about. And that's all that was on your heart is just ministry, 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 ministry. And you never developed him as a person, a whole man. We are attempting to fit life into the ministry versus ministry into their life. I realized this. I had some guys. I said, listen, gang, what I want you to do is fill out your basic weekly schedule. Just tell me what you're going to be doing basically each hour of the day this week and what will be a basic weekly schedule for you. I had the guys do this. Well, you know what they did? Inevitably, they went out and they drew all the lines and the charts and the hours, and then they filled in their classes. The next thing they did was filled in their man-to-man time, their Bible study, and their quiet time and this type of thing. Well, see, if you'll throw your priorities up here, that's not when you fill in things. And so me, when I take my calendar, I go home, my calendar doesn't remember, but I go home and I take my calendar, and the first thing I fill in on my calendar is I walk in, I sit down, I say, okay, gang, Amy, when are we going to have a date this month? Well, how about tonight? I can't do it, you know, I always want to be tonight. And so so we'll pick a date. Okay, how about next month? And well, just pick a date. So we'll get out this giant calendar, and she's like, okay, I'll take that one. Sweetheart, you're in. Okay, Jennifer, Jeffrey, you know, hey, buddy, when are we going out and get a milkshake? Hey, buddy, how would you? So tonight, always tonight, yeah. And so we fill these things out, see? Because if my priority is at my family is before my ministry, then why don't I fill out my calendar before I get it blocked up with all this ministry garbage? And see, so you know when I learned that one, by the way? Last quarter. Yeah, I really catch on fast. But what I do nowadays, I desperately try to go home and figure out a date with my wife. I figure out, honey, when are you going to be going out to the cabin or getting a day alone in a motel? When do you want that? Well, okay, here, okay. Listen, why don't we catch dinner? Okay, and we fill out. First of all, my time with God. And that's basically blocked out in the mornings. And then the regional things over which I have no control, like big conferences and things like that that come along about twice a year. I don't have any control over that, so I got to block that in. I can't call my RD and say, listen, I'm not coming to the weekend conference. I got a date with my son. That won't go real well. But so I block out the things I have no control over. But then the rest of my time, and by the way, us in Christian work, one of the tremendous advantages is that we really can dictate what we're going to do. Tremendous advantage. If you don't think there's quite a difference in that, you've become somebody's administrative assistant or something like that. Then you don't have any dictate over your time. Well, anyway, so that's kind of this thing about building a better life and meeting a man's need and this type of thing and fitting a guy's ministry into his life versus, you know, have the guy block out when he's going to go play tennis or, listen, this day is a fun day or this day is a kiss-off day or this day is a day to, you know, just to catch up or whatever, you know. And he ought to fill those things in first. Buzz off, okay. We thrust men out into the ministry early. We concentrate on developing them in the ministry versus developing their life. Some good verses on that would be Proverbs 22:6 and Luke 20:40. Jesus had 12 men around him for 3 years, during which time they had almost no ministry. You realize that? You know why he did that? Because he wasn't teaching them how to give the bridge and how to present the... what's the name of your track?
RPO.
Hey, your RPO? RPL? RPMs? Whatever it is. But anyway, see, he wasn't teaching them how to do this track. He was teaching them how to live and how to walk with God, and he was working on their mind and their concept and who he was and this type of thing. And so when he backed off for 3 years, says, okay, sick them, he didn't have to worry about what was going to happen. He had developed them as men. And see, they might have walked out in the first community and Peter stood up to preach and said, good night, you know, I don't have my verse cards. And, you know, they didn't have that stuff. But gang, work on developing people, okay? Develop the man. Really give that much some thought. Highly motivational. Okay, the next one is by conveying warmth, personal interest, and concern. Dr. Howie Hendricks makes a statement, a leader is a lover. And boy, that's really true. Oh, gang, a leader is a lover. Now, I hate for this to go on tape because people like Gene Ward are going to cremate me. But not to mention my wife. No, but see, at our ministry out in San Luis Obispo, this is really going to cost me. Oh, well, price leadership. But we hug quite a bit. I told you. That Gene Ward is going to hang me, man. So anyway. Yeah, now don't all you guys come out next year, it's just so, you know, the conveying of warmth and personal concern, and I am concerned about you. And it's really important. Now, we don't all walk in and greet everybody with a holy kiss type trick. You know, I'm not saying that, you know. And this hugging stuff, you know, it's controlled. In fact, I'm not. But, you know, this fact that, you know, it's highly motivational if a person feels like you just care for them deeply. And by the way, the gang, here again, you can't walk up to a guy and say, well, buddy, really love you, man. He's got to feel it. It's got to be an emotional thing with him. He has got to feel that he is important to you, that you're concerned about it, and he's got to feel it. And if he doesn't feel it, it doesn't exist. I don't care how many times. Your wife's the same way. You say, honey, love you. Well, you know, she can say, who is he trying to kid? Now, but does she feel it? Boy, do you know, I called my wife on the phone the other night. We had a tremendous time over the phone. And I told her that I loved her over the phone. But you know, if there weren't some action and some things that I did that backed it up, those words would be so hollow. And it's the same way with a guy to another guy. Same thing. Well, gang, you've really got to be a lover. And they've got to feel it. Now, old Gid Ackerson, he's a tremendous trooper. And I told old Gid one time, I said, Gid, gang, you just got to communicate warmth to people. You're too much of a phlegmatic. You're practical. You're business, you know, and this type of thing. And men don't really feel like you care deeply for them. And so I said, it wouldn't hurt if you wouldn't start putting your arm around a guy every now and then. Go up, you know, put him on the hand on the shoulder, or, you know, put your arm around him. I think that'd be tremendous for you. Well, about that time, a guy walks into the room. And so Gid looks at this guy and he goes, and he's standing right beside him, and Gid goes. So, Well, you know, some of you people, it may take that. But I'd suggest, you know, you try that. And I'd warm up on the guys. I wouldn't, but I would really develop the ability to communicate concern for people. And you may be concerned about them, but they don't feel it. So work at that, okay? It is tremendously motivational. Man, a guy will just do anything for you if he believes you're really concerned for him. If you really, you know, just have this personal interest in him, he'll do anything for you. It really motivates him. Okay, one other thing here that we'll get into right quick, and that is this last one here. And that is by eliciting or obtaining commitments out of your people. Gang, if it doesn't cost them anything, it's not worth joining. One of the things in forming a team is that in forming a team, your objectives have got to be high enough to demand a commitment. If your objectives aren't very high, then you aren't worth following. They can find guys like you all over. But gang, you have got to elicit some very specific commitments. We had a one-day conference in a church here not too long ago, and there was some confusion in the communication. And it turned out it was on a Saturday that was in between their mission emphasis week type of thing, and they didn't have anything planned on the Saturday, so I asked them, I asked them if we couldn't have our Navigator One Day Conference on that Saturday. And they said, fine. But somehow in the communication, they picked up that the One Day Conference would then become a part of their missions conference. And so when we finally found out that was their thinking, that we were only about 3 weeks away or 2 weeks away, too late to change anything. And so, but one of the things that came up is that we were charging about $4 for this thing. That included a meal and, you know, all that stuff. And, we were charging $4, but one of the guys came to me and said, listen, I don't think it's a good idea to charge for this conference. And he said, we'll pay your speaker expenses, your brochure expenses, et cetera, et cetera. We'll take care of your expenses. We'll pay for the food out of our budget, but just don't charge for it. I disagreed with that. And not violently, but I said, well, I don't feel like it's a good deal just to completely underwrite the thing from the church budget, the missions budget. I just don't think that's a good deal. People come, they get ministered to, they should be willing to help pay for that. Well, yeah. And then he came up with a statement. He said, if you don't charge, you'll get more people. And I just, inside, I went right through the roof on that one. If you don't charge, you'll get more people. I am so sick of us having to lower our standards down to get people to come. I am just sick of that mentality. Lower your standards low enough and you'll get more people. That drives me up a tree. The very idea that I'm going to offer something to somebody that's no more significant than that. And so I begin to think about that a little bit. By the way, I did that. We made it free. You know why I made it free? Because it was his church and he's my pastor. And I wanted to function there, and so it was his concept, his missions conference, and I submitted to that and said, well, okay, I don't really agree with it, but you know, I really can see from your viewpoint how that might be the best for you for the situation. So, man, let's do it, and we did that. But let me speak to this concept. Let's say that you had the Teen Tone Choir of what this guy, Snakes Naval or something, Arkansas, where he's talking about. You know, so this guy, you got the Teen Tone Choir coming in from Snakes Naval, Arkansas to sing at, you know, church downtown here, okay? And so he said, now, gang, this is really going to be tremendous. This is going to be fantastic. I really wish you'd come tonight. And so 200 people show up. Now, what if you'd say, now, gang, we got the Teen Tone Choir coming in tonight, and it's going to cost you $2 a piece because we're going to help them pay for their bus trip out here. They're coming out here. They're singing for us. We'll at least help them some. And so we're going to charge $2 a piece tonight, okay? How many would come? Probably not 200. You know what that would force them to do? Okay, if we're going to charge you for this, and if you don't come, then we will realize that in your thinking, that wasn't worth $2. And gang, if it wasn't worth $2, then the chances are it wasn't worth anything. And if it's not anything, if it's not worth anything, why on earth did you come in the first place? And so what might happen is if they'd start charging it and make it a little more of a commitment for some of these things, that the people wouldn't come, which would in turn force the body, the group, to raise the standards of the things they're bringing in. I think the whole thing would upgrade. James Taylor, you know, Sweet Baby James, Rockabye Sweet, you know the guy, strong singer. He came to L.A. and had a concert in the Hollywood Bowl. Thousands of people there. You know how much they charge per person? 7 greens. Can you believe that? 7 skins for that guy. And the place was packed. You know why they came? $7 is nothing to come here with James Taylor. That's duck soup. And they packed the place out. It was so many people there that he was on closed circuit television. He sang on the stage and they had 2 huge cameras focused on him and just a humongous screen behind him that would reflect on these 2 screens. And I sat so far away, you know, the sounds came to me about 20 minutes late, you know, just, you know. So way back up and down, you know, but the guy was thousands of people there hearing this guy. And boy, gang, I tell you, one of the things that I have down here is that if it doesn't cost them anything, then it's not worth coming to. I don't know. It's just a thought I've been, you know, going around in my brain. But I, boss, commitments, people. You know, if you're going to be somebody who's going someplace and accomplishing something, then you ought to stand for something. It ought to cost people to become a part of your outfit. Man, I tell you, if your vehicle for accomplishing your objective is nothing more than a little hayride or something, then I'm not too sure people want to climb on and stay very long. But boy, if your vehicle is costly and you're going someplace, then I think the quality of man you'll get is a good man, and he'll be there and he's eager for it and he's motivated. Specific commitments. And by the way, gang, there's a thing of timing here. Don't run out to your campus your first year and try to form a team of hard-hitting disciples. You don't have a team of hard-hitting disciples, so don't try to form one. Don't go out there and try to think, oh, no, here's this guy, he's 2 months old in the Lord, and here's a guy that's a young Christian that I just met, but man, he's got a heart for God, and he's turned on. And so you try to get these guys together and elicit some commitments out of them, and boy, gang, this year we're going to do this, and that's going to cost you Thursday night, Wednesday night, and Friday morning, and blah, 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 and you try to make a team out of these young guys. Chances are that's much, much, much too early for these young babes. So it's very crucial as to when you elicit the commitment. And the guy ought to have the ability to understand what you're asking him to do and how much it's going to cost him. He ought to be able to understand that. And boy, gang, I have seen many a young man start off like a hotshot and really do well. And after a while, scripture memory, and then, it's quiet time, and then it's Bible study, you know, and after a while, it's quiet time, scripture memory, Bible study, all he wants to do is to get to know Jesus. And I got him going like a chicken with his head cut off, you know. And the guy flames out. You know why? Because I got him doing all these things, you know, and he's committed to having a quiet time now. And Bible study, oh yeah, I got to come to the Bible study. Oh yeah, we're going witnessing on Wednesday night. I got to go to that now. And it's just too young. So be careful that the timing on the thing. Don't elicit your commitments too early. You can really flame a guy out. One time, Dr. Howie Hendricks down at Dallas Seminary had 6 guys come to him. They said, Dr. Hendricks, we'd really like for you to disciple us. We'd like to be your discipleship group. So he said, well, let me pray about it. And he forgot about it 6 months later. And they came to him and said, listen, have you prayed about that? And he says, no, I forgot about it. So they said, well, how are you going to discern the will of God when you don't pray about it? And so you better pray. So he prayed about it. And he decided it might be a good thing. So the 6 guys came to him. And he says, okay, men, if we get this thing started, here are the standards. You'll have assignments every week. You'll be doing this every week. And he listed all the standards right down the line, pretty stiff. And as the longer the list got, the more they gulped. And eventually they said, now, do you guys want this? And they said, well, yeah, I think so. He said, okay, I'll see you next Tuesday morning at 5:30. So they kind of gulped. And he says, listen, maybe you guys ought to go pray about this. And so he told them. So they all left and they went and prayed about it. And they came back in a period of time. I'm not sure how long it was, but they came back after praying about it. And they said, well, we've made up our mind. This is what we want. And Dr. Hendricks says that he'd been working with these men now for two years. They've now become 36. Because each guy got another little group of 6. But he made the statement, a phenomenal statement. He said, if I die tonight, I will die a fulfilled man. Because of the ministry that I've had with these 6 men. That's a pretty good statement. But see, gang, don't elicit it too soon. When a guy climbs aboard the wagon, make sure that he knows what the prize is, he knows where you're going, and he wants that with all of his heart. Because then you got a winner. Don't elicit your commitments too early. Okay. Well, why don't we stop it there for, you know, for a while here and take some questions. Okay. Yeah. The question is earlier I had mentioned I don't have any specific standards for my core team, and then I talk about commitment here and clarify that, okay? I do have some standards for my core team, but they're not the tangible type. They're very intangible. And I can give them to you right quick. They don't mean anything to you, but I can give them to you. Because, see, when I say these words, I have a concept in my mind that this word produces. And when I say this word, then it means volumes to me. But it may not mean the same to you. So our four standards are the guy's wholehearted. I mean, he means business for God. He's really a wholehearted guy. The second standard is he is single-minded. He doesn't get sidetracked into dilly-dally things that really don't have anything to do with the objectives that he stated for his life. He doesn't get sidetracked. He doesn't get off on wild, harebrained things that... But the thing is, his heart beats toward this thing, toward which we're going together. He's a wholehearted guy. He's a very single-minded guy. Now, here again, I'm not talking about a guy who only does ministry when I say single-minded. Don't let that concept, you know, get into your thinking. The third is that he's got a fighting spirit. When times of discouragement hit and when things look bad and all this type of thing, the guy just tenaciously hangs in there. He won't quit. By the way, you guys ever thought about Abraham, the great man of faith? You know, it says Abraham, giant man of faith. You ever thought about that? Well, I read through Genesis there, and I read about Abraham, and kept keeping in mind Romans 4, 20 and 21, where it talks about he staggered not at the promises of God, but was strong in faith, giving glory to God, being fully persuaded that what he had promised. I read Genesis with Romans 4, 20 and 21 in mind. And the question that kept coming to my mind is, what choice did he have? God says, I'm going to give you a son. Now, what choice has he got? And I kept looking for this. Where does this demonstrate the fact that he's this giant, great man of faith? And toward the last of Genesis, you know what I finally came to? Or the last part of Abraham there, the story about him. You know what I finally came to? As a thing that they had that it just vividly imprinted upon everybody else about this guy Abraham, why he's such a man of faith. The only thing I came up with was the fact that he did not go back to Ur of the Chaldees. He did not go back. And he sat out there and he wandered and he wandered and he wandered and he would not go back. For 24 years he wandered before his wife became pregnant and the next year had a child. 25 years after the promise he had a child and he would not go back home. And gang, there are sometimes in the ministry when the only thing I haven't done is packed up and gone back to Louisiana and started raising cows. I am so discouraged. I feel such a failure, and the only thing I haven't done was pack it up and leave. A fighting spirit, hang in there. Don't give up the ship. God is in charge. He will work it out, etc., etc. Don't give up. Hang in there. A fighting spirit. Second thing, fourth thing, is a sacrificial spirit. A willingness to sacrifice. And by that, for instance, just to give you a little. This is a very small one. But, by the way, you know, the time we went over to Taft and worked on that guy's farm, you know what day that was? That was Mother's Day weekend. But these guys, it was a three-day weekend. No, it wasn't. No, it wasn't. But it was a weekend where there were a lot of people had gone home and there were no ministry activity planned. It was basically a free weekend. And so it came out that was the only weekend that we could go over to Taft and help this guy on his farm. We got no pay for that. And so the guys, and I says, well, you know, we need about eight guys to go. And the guys signed up. Let's go. These guys lived quite, their homes were quite away from campus. They weren't going home that weekend anyway. And so we did that. Dan Green came through town the other day, and so I was telling the gang that he would be coming in, and a guy named Dave Eccles, 28 years old, architect, good man, sharp guy. And Dave said, well, listen, he can stay with our pad. And so I said, well, where do we sleep? Dave said, man, he'll have my bed. Here's a guy, 28 years old, the head of the apartment, sharp guy, dorm leader, et cetera, et cetera. And he's the first guy that immediately volunteers, he can have my bed, and I'll sleep on the floor. And this spirit of sacrifice, this willing to sacrifice, oh, gang, that's so crucial. And in this book by J. Oswald Sanders, he talks about that quite a bit on spiritual leadership. He talks about leaders are people who make tremendous sacrifice. And so you might as well build that early. Then the next thing is that it is my judgment and my ability to discern and so forth, the guy can hack what I'm going to be asking him to do. He can actually do what I'm going to be asking him to do. And I'm the only guy that knows, you know, the extent of what he's going to be walking into when he joins that team. I'm the only guy that really knows, because he doesn't. So we do have those standards, but they're not measurable. Brett?
How much do you utilize profiles and at what point in your profile system would a guy be able to consider bringing him to the point of this type of commitment to a small group of
people? Well, let me just give you some generalities here. We operate on the basis of dorm teams. Each of our dorm leaders are responsible, or each guy on the core team is responsible for a dorm. And when I say they're responsible for a dorm, I mean they're responsible for a dorm. All the evangelism, all the Bible studies, everything that happens in that dorm the whole year is dependent upon that guy. I refuse to come in and say, okay, now, listen, why don't you do this and why don't you do that and this type of thing. If it's going to fly, it's going to fly because of him, not because of me. And by this, the reason I do this is I feel like we build tremendous initiative and creativity in a guy's life, and we build force into him, a guy that, you know, okay, this is what we're going to do, and he goes ahead and he does it, and we develop that in him. And it's a tremendous, this responsibility is a tremendous builder. But and each of those guys each of those dorm leaders has a dorm team. Now, generally speaking, for those guys, the dorm teams are disciples and above. But usually they've been around, in fact, I don't know of any case at this point, they haven't been around well over a year before they're on a little dorm team. And the guys on our ministry team, see, at one time this year, I don't know if this sounds good or bad, but at one time this year, there wasn't a single guy on our team except Dave Eccles who was old, more than 3 years older than the Lord, that was on our campus core team. Basically pretty young guys. But see, they've been in a context where they'd been around for a couple of years under myself, and tremendous. I mean, they'd just really been developed. They'd really been helped and developed. I'll give you an example. See, this guy, Pete Perkins, when Pete became a Christian down at Irvine, we started meeting in Bible study, and we started off by meeting in Bible study twice a week. And we'd meet, our Bible study discussion was an hour and a half twice a week. And then Pete and I got 11 hours of man-to-man time a week as a young Christian. And of course, I didn't have a whole lot of people to meet with, but I'd meet with him twice a week personally. He'd come over to my house. We'd lift weights together three times a week, and we'd catch at least a meal or two a week, and we had Bible study twice a week, plus this time I'd just drive by the dorm and chat with him. But we averaged about 11 hours a week of time together, just he and I. Now, so these guys have been developed. Good men. They're young, but, oh, man, golden character. I had a youth director tell me one time, he said, well, I shouldn't use that tone of voice. I'll prejudice the case. But he said, he said, what you do is you just come in and pick off the cream of the crop, and that's what you do. And I said, what cream of the crop have I picked off? And every one of these guys, see, was led to Christ in a Navigator ministry. Every one of them. Every one of them were basically a young guy. You know, not real old. And he said, well, the guys you got out there, He said, they don't really qualify as overseers. They don't have any business doing what they're doing. They don't qualify as spiritual as overseers. I said, okay, well, what don't they qualify? Where are they unqualified? And he said, well, yeah, but as far as a board of elders or something like that, they wouldn't even compare. I said, where would they compare? I'll compare them with any board you've got. Where will they compare? Well, see, they are quality guys, quality men. But some of the things that we've already covered in this about motivating people and developing people and loving people and this type of thing, we've had a consistency in that for a couple of years with them. Now, let me, I've kind of gotten off the track. What was you're talking about the quality to come on the team? It's not his age and it's not his time he's been around. And the profiles we use in an advisory capacity. It's like Jim Peterson said down in Brazil, stop lights and stop signs are always used in an advisory capacity down in Brazil. And so that's kind of how we use the profiles. They're in advisory capacity. They're not law. Here again, you know, I'd say ask the Lord for discernment to see a guy's heart. Good night. It's only 9 o'clock. Hot dog. We got time for something else. Well, you want to take a break, Max? Okay. Let me give you an assignment. I think it'd be good, very good practice for you. And I'd like for you to enter into this with a seriousness. I'd like for you to envision yourself. You just got back to the campus or so, and you've just registered. Now you got the weekend, and maybe school starts Monday or something like this. And you've gone to some place where you can really get some good think time, and you want to set on paper your priorities and your objectives for your own walk with God and your own ministry for this coming year. And why don't we make it like it's about the middle of September or something in that area, and you're just going to do it to the Christmas break, okay? Let's just make it that long. But I would like for you to write down your priorities on paper and write it down, and then underneath each of your priorities, write out your objectives. Okay? This is what I would like to accomplish this quarter. And you would write them, of course, underneath your priorities. This would be, of course, for your personal walk with God and your family if you have one. And by the way, this would also include, if you're single, and it would include your family back home. One of our guys this year had listed to write a letter home once a month and a postcard every week or something like that, you know. Things like that. He had it down as his objective to do that. And that was his family objectives. So, but I would like you, I don't know if you've done this before, but I would like you to work on this. Now, let me show you my job description. Can I get into that? And I don't want this to be a mind blower, but anyway, this helps me. Let me go over you basically what I feel my job is with the organization out at wherever I am, Cal Poly. Okay, my job is, you know, cut these lights. Hit those over there, please. Can you focus that, Bob? If it's not in focus, I can't tell. But let me just go over what I envision as my job, okay? And here again, you know, nobody's super duck, but this helps me, and I pull this thing out and read it, and it really helps me to stay on target with where I'm going and what I'm trying to do. It really helps. Number one, my job is being done well when each dorm leader has clear objectives for his area of responsibility. In other words, my job is, I'm doing a good job, basically, when each of the guys who reports to me knows where he's going. Now, let's see, do I have this as a handout?
Yes.
You don't have to write these down, we'll just hand them out. You want to start passing those things out? And you can have a copy of this, just for your information, okay? Now, I wrestled with this thing, and I wrote it out myself. I didn't copy it from anybody else. I didn't read anybody else's. I just wrote this thing out after listening to some tapes on leadership and building and thinking a lot about it, and I just wrote it out, okay? I tried to make it fit me and as to what I felt I should be doing, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So don't try to make it yours, per se. It's just an example, hopefully motivational to help you to do the same thing for yourself. I feel it'll be tremendously helpful to you. Okay, number two, my job is being done well when each dorm leader has and is maintaining personal objectives, his walk with God, his health, his family, his job, self-development, et cetera, et cetera. So the first thing is he has clear objectives for his area of responsibility. You know, in other words, have 3 Bible studies going, do this, do that. Second thing is he has clear personal objectives for his own life. Number three, why don't I just wait a minute till we get some of these passed out or get them started back. Number three is when each dorm leader is utilizing a well-planned weekly schedule. I feel like one of the most, or one of the wisest uses of my time could be in the area of helping another guy use his time wisely. I'm not too sure that time is our most precious commodity. And I think you'd be doing a tremendous service to a lot of people if you could help them to learn how to use their time better. And I want to be doing that with the dorm people. Number four, when each dorm leader knows what his job is, knows how to do it, is equipped to do it, and wants to do it. Now this covers priorities, it covers objectives, it covers his ministry principle, tools, motivation, self-starter, etc., etc. But he knows what his job is, he knows how to do it, he's equipped to do it, and he wants to do it. Any questions on that, on any of these so far? Okay, number five, my job is being done well when each dorm leader has been developed in the area of alertness and discernment, has learned to think through a situation, and is able to make and stick to a hard personal decision. In other words, he is alert, he makes good observations, he can put it together, and he can make a decision. Now let me just kind of camp on that one a little bit, because I feel like it is so critical. One of the things that I feel is, I better not do that. One of the things I feel is a weakness in our training is the fact that we do not train men to be good observers. Have you guys ever played the game of trivia? Any of you guys ever played that? For instance, what color of shirt did your roommate wear yesterday? You have the foggiest idea. Without looking at him, you probably don't know what color he's wearing today. Because you just don't see. You've looked at the guy a dozen times today and you can't remember what color shirt he's got on. Without turning around, what color shirt does Max have on? He stood up here, right here, a half a dozen times today. He just pulled it off a few minutes ago. He's got his t-shirt on. No. But see, it is so easy, gang, to see or to look and not see. And one of the things that I remember one time we went to Colorado Springs and we went to this couple's home and we walked out later on and Gia turned to me and he said, "What was the strangest thing in that living room to you?" And I racked my brain to try to think of anything that was strange and I couldn't. He said, "Well, it was a rifle sitting over in the corner." Can you believe that? We must have been in there about an hour. I don't even think I saw the corner. It was terrible. And then he said, and he wasn't doing this on purpose. He was just talking. Then he said, "By the way, did you see how those the curtains match the carpet?" I don't know what color the curtains are, the carpet. I just walk on that stuff, you know. Well, that's terrible. That's terrible. Well, see, gang, so many times, and it applies, is true in our working with people, is that we do not train people to really see and observe and to be alert. We just stumble through life. And so what I want to, you know, to I don't really feel that you can really be a trainer and a leader of men until you have developed this ability of discernment in your life. But I think prior to being a good discerner is you've got to see something. Now, over dinner we were talking about a guy that I dealt with one time on a problem of being selfish. The thing that helped me with this person is that I had observed the way this selfishness would display itself in about a half a dozen different cases. He was kind of this way, and then he was kind of this way, and then he kind of did this. And I could see a pattern forming in the guy's life, how that in different situations at different times it would crop up, the big self would come to the fore. And I observed this in the guy's life. And when I came to him, I was really able to help him because I had seen how this thing had cropped up consistently time after time in different situations. I had made the good observations. I had been able to go back and say, now what is it with this guy? What is that? And then all of a sudden it crystallized. The guy's just plain selfish. And then I made a decision. I'm going to go to the guy and I'm going to point these things out and try to help the guy with this. But gang, if you're going to be developing people, you really need to work on this area of being alert and seeing things and watching. I've got a lesson learned that covers that. Let me just see if I can cover it with you right quick up at if I can. Oh yeah, here's lesson learned number 12. Let me read this to you. Each day should be looked upon as a day in which to excel. That was a lesson I learned. I trust I've learned it. Each day should be looked upon as a day in which to excel. Boy, gang, I really hope that's your mentality. I was walking to class at Multnomah School of the Bible, reviewing a few verses, when suddenly I realized that I was numbly in a routine. The routine was, and I was going to Bible school that summer, the routine was get up, quiet time, eat breakfast, cram for the test. We had a test every day. Cram for the test, go to class, eat lunch, then go to work, then eat dinner, then play volleyball, then clean up, then study, and then go to bed. The days were very, very busy. Very busy. But the thing that was wrong was that I had gotten into this numb rut of going from activity to activity. The day was so packed, I just kind of bounced from activity to activity. I was simply living from event to event. I was not expecting great things from God that day. I was not alert to learn from any source. I was not aware of all that was available around me. I was not sharp, looking for opportunities to serve, opportunities to minister, to learn, to grow. I was not expecting to sell anything, to excel in anything. I was merely existing. Life should be a daily, exciting adventure. We should be eager and anticipating God to involve Himself in our lives. That's the way life ought to be. Every day, an exciting adventure. Lauren Sanney once said that sometimes 10 years of training can be nothing more than 1 year of training repeated 10 times. Is this not often true of the way we live? Your day is no different from yesterday. You're just repeating yesterday over and over and over and over again. Until somehow you graduate, or the end of the year comes, and you go home, and you get into a rutted home, and you repeat day after day after day after day. And you are numbly going through life. When I was in the Marine Corps, it was reported that one of the officers every morning would, upon arising from his bed, greet the day with the words, "Ah, another day in which to excel." You know what we did to that guy? Terrible, you know. You know, horse laugh. But the guy would get out of bed in the morning and he'd stand up and say, and he'd just kind of stretch and say, "Another day to excel." And we'd laugh at him. You know, you. But the thing is, should not this be our attitude as servants of the living God? Shouldn't that be our attitude? You get up in the morning and think, "Boy, God's alive today. What a tremendous day." And that should be our attitude. And you should go through that day alert, looking for opportunities to serve, to minister, to grow, to develop. Alert. Learning. And that should be your attitude. Well, that's what we're going to try to develop in these people. Seeing things. Alert. Watching. Making good observations. Okay, the next thing, number 6, is when each dorm leader understands the need to and knows how to develop the whole man. In other words, he basically has a syllabus under social, physical, mental, spiritual, emotional, family, job, school. Basically, every facet of the guy's life, he's got something that he wants to develop in that facet. Another thing, each dorm leader, now here we get into kind of mentality a little bit, but my job is being done well when each dorm leader views himself and others as immense value to God and as a living, vital tool in his hand. He views himself as a man with a mission and a destiny. Self-image, his concept of God, faith, are all covered in that one. Okay, the next thing is each dorm leader has deep personal convictions regarding God's character and his ways. In other words, he is a man of conviction and he is a man of perspective. When the hard time comes, instead of getting bitter or blaming other people, he realizes that God is building into his life. He is a man of conviction and a man of perspective. And boy, gang, these are so critical to build into a person's life. Now we get into the team, I think. My job is being done well when a spirit of wholeheartedness, single-mindedness, and winning characterizes the team and permeates the entire area. I feel that's my job, to create the atmosphere. The next thing is the team is characterized by love, compassion, and gentleness, as well as high standards and wholeheartedness. I think you can marry those two. I think you can live. I think those two can exist under the same umbrella. Wholehearted, high standards, man, you're really with it. At the same time, you're compassionate, you're gentle, you're loving. The next thing, and I really like this one, but I feel it's my job to help each man to act like a man and each woman to act like a woman. In other words, they're gentlemen and they are ladies. And I feel like that's my job. They know their roles, their responsibilities. They are mature. They're well-mannered. And this covers many of the areas of etiquette and such things as that. Number 12, and the last one, my job, I feel, is I'm setting the example in character of life, in heart, and in ministry skill. But I'm basically the guy that, like it or not, I'm the guy that just kind of sets the pace. Can't be a bad pace, can be a good pace. But like it or not, you know, as they say, you know, the guy that leads the band has got to face the music. And so, you know, everybody's looking at me. See, and like it or not, that's the way it is. And so I've got to be setting the pace. And that's my job. You got any questions on my job? Brett?
How measurable is it when you sit down and evaluate yourself by it? Just looking at it, I'm not sure that you would ever be the job well.
Extensive.
Yeah,
it's like somebody keeps moving that station on down the track, you know. That's right. But see, gang, not that I, brethren, I don't count myself to have apprehended. But this is where I'm pressing. See, and to me, that's the concept that's so vital, is I haven't made it yet, but I want you to know I'm on the right track, type of thing. And so this is the way I view this. As far as its measurability, it's not tangible. It is very intangible. Like, you know, you're building alertness in the guy. How can you tell when you've built alertness? Well, you can see signs of it, but I'm not sure you can ever get to the point where you can say, I have now built alertness. You can't do that. But it's in a lot of these cases, it's a gut-level feeling. You can sense when the guy is really beginning to make good observations. He's using his head. He's thinking. He's getting some concepts put together. Some thoughts are crystallizing, et cetera, et cetera. You can just a gut-level feeling on that. And, of course, the more you do it, I think the better you become at it. And I'll never become a guy whose job is well done. That's why I put it, my job is being done well when. And so it's a process, and I'm pressing in that direction. Yeah, I have a set of personal objectives for myself, and then as a ministry, we do have measurable, we do have team objectives. I think I can find that one. I'll flash that one up there. Here it is. Now these were produced not by myself, but by the dorm leaders. I said, okay, now what are you guys going to do? And Now, I know this is Greek. Can you up it a little bit? Go ahead. Yeah, there you go. Now, see, each of these slots across here are a dorm. This is tower. This is 02. That's tower 0 and towers 2 and Sierra Madre dorm, and that's 1 and 3 in the same dorm, and that's Yosemite. And that was my ministry off campus, and that was the girls' ministry room in the tower complex, and it all represents an area. And then these were the categories, and these are the men that were responsible down here. And so we set measurable ministry objectives. And when we got together at our first quarter evaluation and this type of thing, then we pull out that sheet. And the dorm leader set that, not me. I don't say, listen, Pete, buddy, why don't you try to get about 10 people in Bible study this quarter? That's up to Pete. And so a converts, number of disciples, number of disciple makers. And by the way, we have profiles for all these things, so that helps us to measure it. But young Christians that we recruited, you know, we're stumbling around, we bump into a guy named Rich, and we say, listen, Rich is kind of wanting some help, and so Rich joins a Bible study, and he begins to respond to help, and he hangs around a little more and wants some help and this type of thing, and man, the guy really ties in with us. So we call that a young Christian that we've just recruited. We met him as a young Christian. Non-Christians who've gone through an evangelistic Bible study, and by the way, that's at least 4 weeks in the Bible study, not a guy who just kind of showed up and went through one and left, but a guy who went through at least 4 weeks of evangelistic Bible study. This was a big Disneyland conference we had. It was a big thing, and we listed that. And then that was summer training programs, number of people going to summer training programs. I think, do I have a handout on that? Don't I have a handout on that one? Okay, I'll give you a copy of that. What I did is I reproduced a lot of this stuff as an example. Okay, you can take the thing out and look at it, work with it, throw it away, do whatever you want to with it. Okay, it's just an example. Okay. Yes.
One problem that I ran into personally when trying to do this was the fact that motivating the guys to set some objectives like that, they had some real problems with the idea of setting numbers.
Yeah.
Obviously, got in the box.
Yeah. I just forget it. You know, I can't, in a sense, that's true. You can say, well, let's believe God for five guys. Well, that's not too many. Why don't we believe him for 10? Well, why don't we just believe him for the world? Well, you know, I don't know. Why don't we? And, I just think, well, listen, you tell me what you believe that God's going to do over there, and with the resources you've got and the men that you've got to work with and your dorm situation, et cetera, et cetera. You come up with a number. And so we do that. And you say, well, I didn't see that in the scripture. You know, Paul didn't walk into Ephesus and say, okay, now God, 26 disciples in Ephesus. Okay. You know, he didn't say that. He just went in and, you know, did the work of God. And you don't see that stuff in scripture. Well, that's true. You don't. You don't see pianos in scripture either. But somehow we play them. You know, and the guy said, well, yeah, you're using a heathen concept, management by objectives. And I'd say, could be. But this helps me. It helps my guys. It helps us do it. It helps us not to waste our time. It helps us set where we're going. It keeps us on target. It keeps us on track. It helps us to evaluate. I think it's a fantastic tool. It is nothing but a tool. It's a great help. We do it.